Good morning. This is the Reuters News Agency for the 21st of May, 2026, read by Steve Hoff. We start today with this exclusive headline. Supreme Leader says enriched uranium must stay in Iran, Iranian sources say. This is coming out of Dubai. Iran's supreme leader has issued a directive that the country's near weapon-grade uranium should not be sent abroad, two senior Iranian sources have said, hardening Tehran's stance on one of the main U.S. demands at peace talks. Ayatollah Mahtaba Khomeini's order could further frustrate U.S. President Donald Trump and complicate talks on ending the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. Israeli officials told Reuters that Trump has assured Israel that Iran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium needed to make an atomic bomb will be sent out of Iran and that any peace deal must include a clause on this. Israel, the United States, and other Western states have long accused Iran of seeking nuclear weapons, including pointing to its move to enrich uranium to 60%, far higher than needed for civilian uses, which and closer to the 90% needed for a weapon. Iran denies seeking nuclear weapons. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said he will not consider the war over until enriched uranium is removed from Iran. Tehran ends its support for proxy militias and its ballistic missiles capabilities are eliminated. Quote, the Supreme Leader's directive and the consensus within the establishment is that the stockpile of enriched uranium should not leave the country, said one of the two Iranian sources, who spoke on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the matter. Iran's top officials, the sources said, believe that sending the material abroad would leave the country more vulnerable to future attacks by the United States and Israel. Khamenei has the last say on most important state matters. The White House and Iran's foreign ministry did not respond to requests for comments. A shaky ceasefire is in place in the war that began with the U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran on February 28th, after which Iran fired at Gulf states hosting U.S. military bases and fighting broke out between Israel and Israel-backed Hezbollah in Lebanon. But there has been no big breakthrough in peace efforts. With the U.S. blockade of Iranian ports and Tehran's grip on the Strait of Hormuz, the vital global oil supply route, complicating negotiations mediated by Pakistan. The two senior Iranian sources said there was deep suspicion in Iran that the pause in hostilities has been a tactical deception by Washington to create a sense of security before it renews airstrikes. Iran's top peace negotiator said on Wednesday that, quote, obviously and hidden moves by the enemy end quote, showed the Americans were preparing new attacks. Trump said on Wednesday the U.S. was ready to proceed with further attacks on Tehran if Iran did not agree to a peace deal, but suggested Washington could wait a few days to get the right answers. The two sides have started to narrow some gaps, the sources said, but deeper splits remain over Tehran's nuclear program, including the fate of its enriched uranium stockpiles, and Tehran's demand for recognition of its right to enrichment. Iranian officials have repeatedly said Tehran's priority is to secure a permanent end to the war and credible guarantees that the U.S. and Israel will not launch further attacks. Only after such assurances are in place, they said, would Iran be prepared to engage in detailed negotiations over its nuclear program. Israel is widely believed to have an atomic arsenal, but has never confirmed or denied it has nuclear weapons, maintaining a so-called policy of ambiguity on the issue for decades. Before the war, Iran signaled willingness to ship out half of its stockpile of uranium, which has been enriched to 60%, a level far higher than is needed for civilian uses. But sources said that position changed after repeated threats from Trump to strike them. Israeli officials have told Reuters, it is still unclear whether Trump will decide to attack and whether he would give Israel a green light to resume operations. Tehran has vowed a crushing response if attacked. However, the source said there were, quote, feasible formulas to resolve the matter. There are solutions like diluting the stockpile under the supervision of the International Atomic Energy Agency, one of the Iranian sources said. The IAEA estimates that Iran had 440.9 kilograms of uranium enriched to 60%. When Israel and the United States attacked Iranian facilities in June of 2025. How much of that has survived is unclear. The IAEA chief Rafael Grossi said in March that what remained of that stock was mainly stored in a tunnel complex in its Isfahan nuclear facility, and that his agency believes slightly more than 200 kilograms of it was there. The IAEA also believes some of that sprawling nuclear complex at Natanz, where Iran had two enrichment plants. Iran says some highly enriched uranium is needed for medical purposes and for research reactor in Tehran, which runs on relatively small amounts of uranium enriched to 20%. The next article comes from Africa. Ebola case confirmed in rebel-held Congo area far from outbreak's epicenter. A case of Ebola has been confirmed in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's South Kivu province, hundreds of kilometers from the outbreak's epicenter, the rebel alliance that controls the area said on Thursday. The case in a rural area near the provincial capital of Bukavu singles the spread of the outbreak that experts believe circulated undetected for around 2 months, several hundred kilometers to the north before being identified last week. The outbreak has been linked to 139 deaths, with 600 suspected cases reported in Ituri and North Kivu provinces as of Wednesday. According to the World Health Organization, two cases have also been confirmed in neighboring Uganda. The Alliance Fiorvi Congo, which includes the Rwanda-backed M23 rebels, who seized swaps of the DRC last year, said that the 28-year-old patient had died and been buried safely. It said the individual had traveled to the northern city of Kinzigani, but gave no details of recent movements. South Kivu health spokesperson Claude Bahizer told Reuters early on Thursday that two suspected cases had been detected in the province, including the fatal case. The other patient was in isolation waiting for test results. An Ebola case was also confirmed last week in Goma, the capital of the neighboring North Kivu province, which is under M23 control. The World Health Organization declared the outbreak of the virus, for which there is no vaccine, a public health emergency of international concern over the weekend. The chair of the Coalition of Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, the CEPI, said the confirmed cases likely represent only, quote, the top of the iceberg. The CEPI, which funds vaccine development, is assessing potential candidates for Ebola. She said it may be possible to meet the CEPI's target of having a safe, effective vaccine for major outbreaks within 100 days, though this would be a big lift. Efforts to contain the outbreak have been complicated by its spread in densely populated urban areas and ongoing armed conflict in eastern DRC. A 2018 to 2020 outbreak of the Zaire strain in the region was the second deadliest on record, killing nearly 2,300 people. This time, first responders say they lack basic supplies, which some have attributed to foreign aid cuts by major donors that have weakened local health services and disease surveillance. Britain said on Thursday it was allocating up to 20 million pounds, which is equivalent to $27 million, to the response. The United States, which gave around $600 million to the 2018 to 2020 response, has so far committed $23 million and said on Tuesday that it would help open up 50 clinics in the DRC and Uganda. Uganda's health ministry said late on Wednesday that it had not been consulted by the United States on plans to establish any clinics, and stressed there is no known local transmission. Information minister told Reuters the United States was overreacting, quote unquote, by banning most travelers to Uganda, along with the DRC and South Sudan earlier this week. Quote, we've handed cases of Ebola at other epidemics for a number of years. We've handled cases of Ebola at other epidemics for a number of years. There is capacity within the country to contain these epidemics. Additional reporting should be forthcoming. Moving on from Africa, we go to the Americas. U.S. offers new relationship to Cuba in Rubio message. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio offered to forge a new relationship between the U.S. and Cuba on Wednesday in a video message to the Cuban people, proposing $100 million in aid and blaming Cuba's leaders for shortages of electricity, food, and water. Quote, we in the U.S. are offering to help you not only alleviate the current crisis, but also to build a better future, Rubio said in a State Department message on Cuban Independence Day. The Trump administration is expected to announce criminal charges against former Cuban President Raul Castro on Wednesday in a move that would mark a step up in Washington's pressure campaign against the Caribbean island's communist government. In his video address delivered in Spanish, Rubio blamed the country's current problems on greed and corruption in its leadership. The real reason you don't have electricity, fuel, or food is because those who control your country have plundered billions of dollars, but nothing has been used to help the people, Rubio said. He said that the United States was offering $100 million in food and medicine to the Cuban people, but it must be distributed by the Catholic Church or other trusted charitable groups. In response, Wednesday morning, Cuba's embassy in the United States said Rubio had lied and that the United States was subjecting the island nation to cruelty. Quote, the reason the U.S. Secretary of State lies so repeatedly and unscrupulously when referring to Cuba and trying to justify the aggression to which he subjects the Cuban people is not ignorance or incompetence, the embassy said in a post on X. He knows full well that there is no excuse for such cruel and ruthless aggression. President Donald Trump has been seeking regime change in Cuba, where communists have been in charge since Castro's late brother, Fidel Castro, led a revolution in 1959. The charges against Castro, 94 years old, are expected to be based on a 1996 incident in which Cuban jets shot down planes operated by a group of Cuban exiles. The U.S. Justice Department official told Reuters last week on condition of anonymity. The U.S. has effectively imposed a blockade on the island by threatening sanctions on countries supplying it with fuel, triggering power outages and delivering blows to its already fragile economy. Now, a little bit closer to home. U.S. weekly jobless claims fall. Single-family housing starts tumble in April. The weekly jobless claims fell 3,000 to 209,000. Layoffs remain low despite high-profile tech job cuts. Continuing claims increased 6,000 to a still relatively low 1.782 million claims. Single-family housing starts drop 9% in April. Building permits decrease 2.6%. The number of Americans filing claims for unemployment benefits fell last week, pointing to labor market resilience and giving the Federal Reserve room to focus on surging inflation from the war in Iran. There are no signs yet that employers are responding to raising costs by reducing headcount. The nearly three-month-long U.S.-Israeli conflict with Iran has disrupted shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, boosting energy prices as well as straining global supply chains and causing shortages of a wide range of goods, including fertilizer, aluminum, and consumer products. Quote, "We still can't rule out some spillover effects from the war and the spike in oil prices on the labor market, which we have already expected would come in with a lag," said Matthew Martin, a senior U.S. economist at Oxford Economics. "But for now, we think the labor market is showing enough stability to allow the feds to feel comfortable keeping policy steady. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits slipped 3,000 to a seasonally adjusted 209,000 for the week ending May 16th, the Labor Department said on Thursday. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast 210,000, another 1,000 more, claims for the latest week. Claims have remained low despite high-profile layoffs in the technology sector, linked to the adoption of artificial intelligence. Financial markets expect the U.S. central bank to keep its benchmark overnight interest rate in the 3.5% to 3.75% range into next year. Minutes from the Fed's April 28 to 29 meeting published on Wednesday show concerns about inflation because of the conflict intensified last month, with the growing number of policymakers saying the Fed should lay the groundwork for a possible rate hike. Policymakers generally expected labor market conditions to remain stable in the near term, the minutes showed, though most judge that risks to the employment side of the federal dual mandate were tilted to the downside. Last week's claim data covered the period during which the government surveyed businesses for non-farm payrolls of May's unemployment report. Claims decreased between April and May survey weeks. Payrolls increased by 115,000 jobs in April after rising 185,000 in March. The number of people receiving unemployment benefits after the initial week of aid, a proxy for hiring, increased 6,000 to a seasonally adjusted 1.782 million during the week ending May 9th. U.S. stocks on Wall Street opened lower as oil prices rebounded after Reuters reports that Iran's supreme leader had issued a directive that the country's near weapons-grade uranium should not be sent abroad. The dollar advanced versus a basket of currencies. U.S. Treasury yields were higher. While the labor market is holding up, the war is inflicting more pain on an already fragile housing market. A report from the Commerce Department's Census Bureau showed single-family housing starts, which account for the bulk of home building, tumbled 9% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 930,000 units in April. Single-family house building fell in all four regions. It declined 2.4% year-on-year in April. The inflation fallout from the Middle East conflict is driving up U.S. Treasury yields. Mortgage rates track the 10-year Treasury note, whose yield is hovering around 1.5%. Whose yield is hovering near a 1.5-year high. The popular 30-year fixed mortgage rate averaged 5.98% at the end of February when the war started, as Fannie Mae expanded purchases of mortgage-backed securities. It has since surged, averaging 6.36% last week. So that's up from 5.598 to 6.36. Data from mortgage finance agency Freddie Mac showed home building was already under pressure from tariffs on imported goods, including lumber and vanity cabinets, as well as higher land, labor, and construction costs. Residential investment, which includes home building, has contracted for 5 straight quarters. Permits for future construction of single-family homes dropped 2.6% last month to a rate of 872,000. They decreased 5.5% year-on-year in April. An improvement is unlikely. The National Association of Home Builders survey this week showed home builders' sentiment remained depressed in May. Next, from the financial end of U.S. U.S. manufacturing activity rises to 4-year high in May, the S&P Global survey shows. The U.S. manufacturing activity strengthened in May, scaling the highest level in 4 years as businesses boosted inventory to guard against potential shortages and rising prices related to the war in Iran. S&P Global said its flash manufacturing PMI increased to 55.3 this month, the highest reading since May of 2022, from 54.5 in April. A reading above 50 indicates growth in manufacturing, which accounts for 9.4% of the economy. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast the manufacturing PMI easing to 53.8. The nearly three-month-long U.S.-Israeli conflict with Iran has disrupted shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, raising energy prices as well as straining global supply chains and causing shortages of a wide range of goods, including fertilizer, aluminum, and consumer prices. The rise offset a moderation in the flash services PMI to 50.9 from 51 in April. That left the S&P Global's flash U.S. composite PMI output index, which tracks the manufacturing and services sectors, unchanged at 51.7. The S&P Global Market Intelligence Chief Business Economist Chris Williamson said the reading indicated, quote, that the economy will struggle to manage annualized GDP growth of much more than 1% in the quarter. S&P Global said, though new order growth at factories slowed, input inventories increased to 11-month high, attributing to the, quote, building a safety stock amid price and supply worries. It measures the suppliers' delivery times lengthened to levels last seen in August of 2022, prior to the war. Suppliers were being constrained by President Donald Trump's sweeping tariffs, with supplier performance deteriorating. A measure of prices paid by factories for inputs jumped to 79.5%. 79.5. The highest reading since June of 2022. And that was an increase from April's reading of 68.4. Manufacturers also passed on higher costs to consumers. The survey's gauge of output prices rose 63.3, the highest level since September of 2022, from an April reading of 61.7. The overall measure of prices paid by businesses for inputs increased to 64.0, the highest reading since November of 2022. And that was an increase from 61.3 in April. That suggests a further acceleration in inflation is coming. Producer inflation increased by the most in 4 years in April, while consumer prices posted their biggest year-on-year gain since May of 2023. But higher prices could weigh on demand and undercut economic growth. Next, U.S. Supreme Court dismisses dispute over death row inmates' intellectual disability findings. The U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday dismissed a challenge by Alabama officials to a judicial finding that a death row inmate convicted of a 1997 murder is intellectually disabled and thus ineligible for the death penalty. The justices said that the case had been, quote, improvisionally granted by the court, effectively undoing its earlier decision to take up the matter. The court heard arguments in the dispute in December. The court had taken up the appeal by Alabama officials to a lower court's approach to determining Joseph Clifton's Smith's intellectual capacity, a method that had weighed multiple intelligence quotients, or the IQ, and tests alongside expert testimony. Under a 2002 Supreme Court precedent, executing an intellectually disabled person violates the U.S. Constitution's Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment. At issue is Smith's case was whether and how the courts may consider the cumulative effects of multiple IQ scores in assessing a death row's inmate's intellectual disability. Republican President Donald Trump's administration backed the state of Alabama in that case. Liberal justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson concurred in the Supreme Court's decision to dismiss the case. Conservative Justice Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dissented. Chief Justice John Roberts and fellow conservatives Justice Neil Gorsuch joined Alito's dissent in part. Smith, now 55 years old, was convicted and sentenced to death for the 1997 murder of a man named Dirk Van Dam in Alabama's Mobile County. Smith fatally beat the man with a hammer and saw in order to steal his boots, tools, and $140. According to evidence in the case, the victim's body was found in his mud-bound Ford Ranger truck in an isolated wooded area. Like many states, Alabama considers evidence of IQ tests of 70 or below as part of the standard for determining intellectual disability. The Supreme Court rulings in 2014 and 2017 allowed courts to consider IQ scores ranging that are close to 170, along with other evidence of intellectual disability, such as testimony of adaptive deficits. Smith had five IQ test scores, ranging from a high of 78 to a low of 72. A federal judge noted that Smith's lowest score could, in fact, have been as low as 69, given the standard error of measurement. The SEM of roughly plus or minus 3 IQ points. The judge then found that Smith had significant deficits from an early age in social and interpersonal skills, independent living, and academics. The Atlanta-based 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the judge's conclusions in 2023, setting aside Smith's death sentence. This prompted Alabama officials to file the first of two appeals to the Supreme Court in the case. The justices in 2024 threw out the 11th Circuit's decision, saying that the lower court's evaluation of Smith's IQ score could have been read two ways and required clarification. The 11th Circuit Court responded with an opinion clarifying that its evaluation was based on a holistic approach to multiple IQ scores that also consider additional relevant evidence, including expert testimony. This prompted the second appeal by the Alabama officials to the Supreme Court. Moving on to the UK. UK's Streeting, eyeing Labour leadership, wants changes to capital gain tax. Former British Health Minister Wes Streeting, a potential candidate for the leadership of the Labour Party, said he backed the introduction of tax changes which would equalize capital gains tax with income tax to make the system, quote, fairer. Streeting said on Saturday that he wanted to challenge embattled Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer if there was a contest. Days after he urged Starmer to set a timetable for his departure. The former health minister, who has already said he believes Britain should seek to rejoin the European Union, said on Thursday that another of his proposals would be changing the capital gains tax. Capital gains tax is paid on profits of more than £3,000, which is equivalent to $3,900, made when an asset is sold, and rates depend on how much the seller usually pays in income tax and how large the gain is. Streeting would raise the rates of the tax from 18% to 24%, currently to as much as 40% and 45%, depending on the person's income tax bracket. According to one study, the change would raise 12 billion English pounds a year. Quote, "We need a wealth tax that works. A pound made from simply owning assets should not be taxed less than a pound made from hard day's work," Streeting said in a press conference. Labour's Andy Burnham is seen as a possible frontrunner to any leadership bid, although he needs to win the Makersfield seat near Manchester on June 18th before he can launch a challenge. And this headline is from Turkey. Turkey court annuls main opposition party's 2023 Congress in latest blow. Ankara, Turkey. A Turkish court on Thursday annulled the 2023 Congress of the main opposition Republican People's Party, in which current chairman was elected, dealing a potential blow to President Tayyip Erdogan's political challengers. The Ankara court said former chairman Kamil Kılıçdaroğlu should replace the current leader, Özel. And another quick headline from Russia. Three dead in attack on locomotive in Russia's Bryansk region, the railways says. Three people were killed when a locomotive was struck by a Ukrainian drone in Russia's Bryansk region on Thursday. All three victims were Russian railway employees and were hit at a railway station in the town of Unetsha. Biran's region's acting governor had earlier said that Unetsha had come under attack. The Biran's region borders Ukraine and is frequently targeted by Ukrainian attacks. And from the world of media, NBC executive voices support for late-night shows amid Trump attacks. New York. The NBC broadcast network will continue to support its late-night comedy shows that have come under attack from U.S. President Donald Trump. The NBC Universal Studios chairman, Perlina Igbokwe, said at a Reuters Next conference on Thursday, the Republican president has lashed out at several late-night comedians who routinely joke about him. In the NBC lineup, Trump has called for Seth Meyers to be fired from Late Night with Seth Meyers and has criticized The Tonight Show host Jimmy Fallon. NBC, a unit of Comcast, pioneered the late night format and has been making late night comedy shows for 75 years through multiple presidential administrations. Quote, the reason why it's been successful is because it is an equal opportunity commentator, she said. I think that for us going forward to remain successful, we have to continue to do exactly that. In November, Trump urged NBC to fire Meyers, saying the comedian suffered from Trump derangement syndrome. Trump's remark on Truth Social was reported by FCC Chairman Brendan Carr, the head of the agency that regulates U.S. TV stations. Earlier this year, the president praised CBS for canceling The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, a decision the network attributed to financial reasons. Trump said at the time that he heard NBC's Fallon would soon be gone. These people are with absolutely no talent, who are paid millions of dollars for, in all cases, destroying what used to be great television, Trump said in July. Trump also objected to ABC's decision to return Jimmy Kimmel Live to the air in September after a six-day suspension over remarks about conservative commentators Charlie Kirk. The president of the NBC, she's a chairwoman. In some ways, late night has never been more relevant, adding that we are going to continue to do what we've been doing really successfully. The executive, who also oversees scripted original programming for the Peacock streaming service, also noted that audience watch more entertainment than ever, even though traditional television viewership has declined. Mike Shore, creator of the comedies The Good Place and Parks and Recreation, said political polarization has not changed his approach to storytelling. The subjects of morality, optimism, and community, those things are more relevant to me now than ever. He added that people still work in offices and people still want to laugh. As long as that's true, I think it is possible to write good workplace comedy shows, Shore said. moving on to the health industry. Eli Lilly says next-gen obesity drug helps patients lose 28% of body weight. This is coming from New York. Eli Lilly said on Thursday its experimental obesity drug helped patients lose more than 28% of their weight over a year and a half in a key trial that allows the company to seek regulatory approval and potentially launch the next generation drug next year. The results were in line with Wall Street expectations and could make retatrutide the most powerful weight loss drug in a booming obesity treatment market, where Lilly is competing with Novo Nordisk. Analysts had previously raised concerns about the drug's side effects after earlier trial data showed patients had experienced dysentesia, a rare abnormal skin condition. The latest data appears to ease some of those worries, with fewer patients reporting dysesthesia. Shares of Eli Lilly rose 1% on morning trading. Nova shares were down 0.7%. In late-stage trial in patients with obesity but not diabetes, those receiving the highest 12-milligram dose lost an average of 28.3% of their weight over 80 weeks, while more than 45% lost at least 30%, and a level of efficiency the company said rivals bariatric surgery. Quote, "That's really a threshold that historically been associated with bariatric surgery," the Eli's president of cardiometabolic health said in an interview. "To have that available in a medicine is a pretty big deal." Lilly currently approved injection Zepbound and Novo's Wegovy have shown weight loss in the roughly 15 to 20% in different trials, while Lilly's oral obesity candidate has delivered about 11%. When asked about the side effects, Custer said the drug profile was broadly consistent with other GLP-1 medicines. In a previous trial published in December, retatrutide, I think that's how you pronounce it, helped patients with obesity and osteoporosis of the knee lose about 28.7% of their weight over 40 weeks and reduce knee pain. In March, Lilly said another trial showed the drug helped reduce blood sugar levels and loss of an average of 15.3% of their weight. Lilly said patients who continued the treatment for the full 2 years in the latest trial lost an average of over 30% of their body weight on average. This figure is the most impressive given that it confers a level of efficiency previously unheard of and is substantially better than even Lilly's own tirzepatide, whatever. I think that's a Zepbound. And referring to the blockbuster Lilly drug sells as Mounjaro and Zepbound. I guess I was correct. And also on the healthcare front, India's top condom maker may hike prices due to war-linked oil surge. India's Mankind Pharma may raise condom prices if the Middle East conflict drags on any further and keep oil prices elevated, its chief executive told Reuters on Thursday. The company, which makes man-forced condoms and is the market leader with a share of about 30%, has enough stock to last for a few months if the war persists. The CEO said, but warned that Mankind may have to pass on a higher cost to customers if oil prices remain elevated. He did not specify a time frame for a potential price increase. Tensions in the Middle East have rattled global markets, with supply disruptions lifting oil prices by about 50% to above $100 per barrel since the war began in February. Oil is a key cost for condom makers as they rely on petroleum-linked raw materials such as chemicals, lubricants, and packaging, although the base is natural latex. Malaysia's Carex, the world's largest condom maker, also plans to raise prices by 20 to 30% as the war drives up the cost of raw materials and shipping. Mankind's fourth quarter results showed raw material costs have been broadly flat, raising less than 0.5% both quarters on quarter from the year earlier. Man-forced condoms typically sell for around 100 rupees, which is equivalent to $1.04, to 150 rupees, which is equivalent to $1.56 for a 10-pack, among the cheapest in India. Separately, Aurora said Mankind was betting on its generic semaglutide weight loss injection and looking to expand its into the Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities. The company launched the injection in the first week of April amid intensifying competition in India's fast-growing weight loss drug market, where therapies range from low-cost generic semaglutide at around 1,300 rupees to premium options such as Zepbound, priced at 27,000 rupees. Right now, it's a mad rush, a very crowded field, Aurora said, adding that is too early to quantify the demand for Mankind's product. So, just to let you know, the equivalent of $1 equals 96.2 Indian rupees. That's it for today. We'll be back with more news and headlines from Reuters.